What's good, podcast world, and welcome back to episode 4 of Balls Deep. I'm your co-host, Zach Wunderlich, as always joined by co-host Chance Rich. Chance, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing well, man. What a day. What a day. We got a hot guest up in here.
Got a big-time guest for our listeners out there. Our other co-host, Caleb Price, could not join us tonight. His dad is the head basketball coach at Carl Albert, and they're playing in the state tournament, so we understand him not being here. He's got to go watch his dad, Coach Carl Albert, hopefully to another gold ball. To our listeners out there, I told you guys on Facebook this week who our special guest is today. Let me tell you guys, we are pumped for this one. My guy don't need no introduction, but we'll give him an introduction anyways. We have 2011 first-round draft pick, 2016 MLB Rookie of the Year, 2017 MLB All-Star, and Detroit Tigers starting pitcher, Michael Fulmer. Mike, how you doing, brother?
I'm well, guys. Appreciate y'all having me.
Hey, absolutely,
yeah,
man.
And you know, I appreciate it, brother.
I've told you 100 times, you know, we're a small podcast right now, but having somebody like yourself come on and join us, taking the time out, we do appreciate it very much, sir.
I'm just glad to be here. Hope y'all grow big, man.
Absolutely. And also, congrats. We were talking a little bit before we started the podcast. Congrats on the new baby girl just born. I know you're super busy right now, spring training, opening day coming up, just had a child. So congratulations. And again, thank you for taking the time off.
Thanks, man. It's kind of bad timing on our part, having a girl in spring training, but
yeah.
we'll make it work.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure.
Yeah, man.
So let's get into our first question that we got for you. You know, Our motto here is me, Chance, and Caleb. You know, we were all college baseball players, so our motto is, you know, we're three washed-up college athletes, you know, and just like to talk sports. That's why we started this podcast. But we have a little trend going here that our only two guests that we've had on are complete 180s from washed up with you and Kel Kosha. You know, that was your teammate at Deer Creek, you know, joined up. Now he signed a deal with the Tigers. You know, I'm sure you're pretty pumped about that, Kel. You know, obviously had nothing but great things to say about you in his episode.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, us being college athletes and then all the kids out there, you know, like everybody dreams of being, you know, where you're at right now. So, draft day, you know, 2011, draft day comes up. You get picked in the first round. If you could just walk us through that day, you know, how it was when you got the news, did you have a little bit of – Did anybody let you know, like, hey, we're taking you in the first round? Did the first round come, you know, as a shock to you? You know, just whatever it may be. I understand that on draft day, you know, people were talking to you. You know, all of us knew that, you know, that played with you and knew you, like, you're definitely getting drafted, you know. But if you could just walk us through that day and how it was, brother.
Oh, draft day. That's it seems like a century ago, honestly. It was a long night. For sure. Funny story, we actually had our watch party at a Hooters in Oklahoma City. somehow got it there. Had the whole Deer Creek baseball team out. Obviously, my agent was on the phone with me all night. And girlfriend at the time, now wife, thankfully, was there with me. And it kind of – I didn't really know what to expect on draft night. You know, the 2011 class was a fully loaded, stacked class. I mean, even just talk about high school pitchers from Oklahoma. Obviously, you had Dylan Bundy going fourth overall to the Orioles at the time, and then Bradley Archie going over to the Diamondbacks at seventh overall.
Yeah.
Not many scouts come out to Oklahoma to watch baseball. You know, it's just right. Small states. You don't think you hear three guys, you know, big name pitchers from high school coming out of the state of Oklahoma, but following those two guys, I think a lot of scouts came to watch them in Tulsa, and a few of them decided to drive down to Oklahoma City, Edmond, to watch me. So I was thankful for that, you know, Bundy and Bradley brought all the hype to Oklahoma. Yeah. But but draft night was a lot of back and forth with my agent. You know, I didn't really have an expectation to get taken in the first round or supplemental round. But, you know, as these picks come in, the night gets longer and longer and longer, and your phone is just sitting there and not making a sound. And you almost start to get worried a little bit, to a point where, I mean, I had a big decision to make. I could have played ball at college ball at Arkansas or signed pro right out of high school, but you know, the later it got in draft night, it's you start thinking about, hey, I'm going to go to Arkansas now, right?
Yeah.
But sure enough, you know, night went on, and I mean, I had a couple calls around the 10th pick, talking about teams maybe taking me with their first overall pick, you know, in the middle of the first round, late first round, and then the supplemental round hits, and I get a couple more calls of saying, hey, if this guy's not there, they're probably going to take you, this and that. But ultimately, it came down to the Mets at 44 overall that were willing to take a chance on me. And that was probably after a 4.5, 5-hour night at Hooters.
Yeah.
18 years old, but all the wings you can eat, though.
Yeah, no, for sure.
But, you know, the funny thing was, especially with being taken with the Mets, you know, obviously I was their second pick in that draft. They had drafted a high school bat out of Wyoming at number 13 overall, I think. And so they picked me, and about 10 minutes later, I get a call, and David Wright is on the other end of the phone call all the GM and the head scouts and all this stuff. And,
that's big,
you know, I didn't realize he was on the call. And I said, hang on, you know, sir. I think I was talking to the GM. I said, hang on, sir. I got to walk out of Hooters real quick.
Yeah.
And at that moment, I realized I was not on a one-on-one call with the GM. I was on a conference call with about 30 other guys.
Yeah.
David Wright leading it. And everybody's just cracking their ass up, man.
Oh, man.
But it's a night that I'll never forget. Just being able to celebrate with my family and friends. And it was a wild one, but I really didn't have too much expectations going in. I knew that you had a bunch of guys getting drafted that are still around today.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, myself, you know, my heart would have been beating through my chest. You know, you were at the Hooters and you're a senior in high school. Like you can't even have a cold beer, you know, to relax your nerves at all. You know, it's like you just got to sit there. You're filling your stomach full of wings. You're like, when's this phone gonna ring?
It's all boobs, butts, and wings at that point, partner.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, we've all, you know, you've made it to, you know, the level that every baseball player aspires to make. You know, so just that I knew, you know, that draft night, it was gonna be a wild night. You know, so I appreciate you walking us through that. So, Chance, what you got for him?
Man, first off, right off the bat, I don't know if you remember this, but I replayed it in my head over and over, seeing Fulmer on the mound, and I'm stepping into the box, and I see fucking 94 coming at me, and I'm like, okay, here we go. I got a swinging bunt for a base hit. And I will, if I talk to you ever again, I will never let you live it down.
Yeah, I was never the most athletic, you know, off the mound. So, hey, that's a great spot to hit it.
Yeah. Oh, man. I must have put it right down the line on that hard-ass swing I was going for the fence for. But yeah, buddy.
We talked about the game on Kel's episode. Kel remembered all of it, which was – it surprised me. It took me back a little bit, like –
Yeah.
He had brought up, you know, like that Chandler Deer Creek game, and you know, it was Fulmer versus Gray, you know, and there's scouts obviously everywhere. We all, you know, I knew how good you were. You know, I played summer with you, and I obviously knew how good John was. I was high school teammates with him, but little did we know that this is first round versus first round right here. And Kale had brought that up in his episode of. He remembered every little detail, and he kind of walked me into it. He's like, I think we beat you guys, and I was like, no, you hit the bomb off John, and you know to go up by like one or something, you know, whatever it was, and he started giving me eyebrow wags, you know, like he walked me into it. He knew exactly what we were talking about, but are you the same way with Kale? I know, you know, like. That game obviously, you know, was a big time at the deal because it was you and John going against each other. But do you remember much about that game?
I don't remember the details. I'm sure like Kale does. I think it was a 1-0 game, I believe.
Oh, yeah. We couldn't score on you.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What year is that? Was that my sophomore year?
Yeah, what, I believe so. Yes. Yes.
Or was that John's senior year?
It was our sophomore year and John's junior year.
John's junior year.
Jack Gray was still playing. I remember.
See, I wasn't even any good back then.
Yeah, man. Well, I was telling Kel in his episode that Deer Creek's bullpens are, you know, out there in the, or used to be out there in the outfield, and you know, we were ranked number 1 or 2 in 3A, whatever it was, and you guys were ranked 1 or 2 in 5A, and we enjoyed going and playing those bigger schools because we had the luxury of putting John Gray on the mound, you know. And I remember I told this story in Kel's episode of when we showed up, we seen you down there warming up, you know, and you had this thing about you in the bullpen. You're not 100% guy in the bullpen. Like it looked like you were throwing, like, you know, low to mid eights, you know, just warming up. And I was like, in my head, I was thinking, oh yeah, they think, you know, we're small school 3A, you know, we ain't got to throw our ace out there. But I'm like, well, we got John Gray on the mound. And then, so we're watching you, we're getting pumped up, and then you come out and you throw your warm-up pitches, and then our leadoff guy comes in and first pitch fastball, and it was like, holy shit. No, he was slow playing us because it's, you know, 90, 92, 93, 94 miles an hour, and it's like, well, we might have bit off a little bit more than we can chew here.
Oops. So our team we had some pitching that, I mean, Kale was a phenomenal pitcher in high school. We had Zach King, who was phenomenal as well. Tyler Price. I mean, we had some arms. So, you know, at that time, I might have been number 3 there. You know, so yeah. You guys did get the number 3. I mean, that team was stacked. And you know, I know Kale does, and I do too. That we still regret that we didn't get a state championship when we played.
Yeah,
the weirdest thing in the world, we were talking about that a couple of weeks ago whenever we had Kale on, and we were like, we're sitting there wondering, like, how the hell did the team that Deer Creek had back then not get a title? Because there's 5 of them in the league right now. Like, what the hell is going on, man? Like, I didn't understand
not to mention
rookie of the year.
Not to mention all the arms you had on the mound, but you also had the luxury of Brian Anderson.
Yeah, BA over there hanging out at short.
Yeah, that dude is unreal.
Yeah, the team Deer Creek had, you know, those 4 years, it's pretty crazy you guys didn't win a title. And you know, you guys were 2 classes ahead of us whenever we were in high school. We didn't win a title. We didn't win state at all, you know, and we went all 4 years as well. And, we had John Gray three of those years in our grade, so. I mean, it's crazy how it plays out like that, you know. But let's get on to this one. I got one for you because I really want to know this because I think it's a question a lot of people want to ask because it's, you know, you see good hitters all around the league nowadays, really good hitters, hitting dingers, hitting bombs. So who is the best hitter you have faced yet? And I'd like to know why.
The best hitter.
Yeah, man. Like the one that you face yearly. You see him every year. You're like, damn it, he's up. Now I gotta figure this out. I'm about to dice him up.
Can we kind of elaborate on it of, like, what about, like, you know, obviously at your level, they can all hit.
Yeah, no doubt. Mm-hmm.
So best hitter that, you know, like, you're watching film on. If you're like, you know, I have a start, you know, this week against, you know, whoever it is, I know, like, let's say you're starting against the Angels, you know, obviously you're doing your homework because you're going to face Mike Trout that week or, you know, whoever it is. Like, can we elaborate it that way of your homework? Who's that best hitter that to date of who you got?
Yeah, pretty much exactly what I was saying. Like, I would like to know as well as a lot of other people, you know, Who's that hitter that you get to go against as an all-star, you know, as rookie of the year, as somebody who starts? Who's that guy that is just like, all right, we got to figure this shit out. We got to go at him fucking 110, 120%.
So, you know, I'll start you guys off with a kind of cliche quote. It's extremely tough to make it to the big leagues, but it's even tougher to stay there. Absolutely. And the reason for it is that, you know, I'm 5 years in now, and you face the same guys over and over again. Your pitch ability, your pitching, your stuff doesn't change, but they can change swings,
yeah,
right? Absolutely. You can do little tweaks on the mound and get new pitches and stuff like that. But for, you know, the scheme of things, hitters, I think, have the advantage seeing pitchers multiple times every single year for years and years, right?
Yep.
So I'll give you a name that I struggle against, and he's in our division, and it might not be a name that everybody is super familiar with, but they should be. Whit Merrifield from the Royals
is a
pain in my ass.
Yeah.
What a scrappy dude, man.
That's it. I mean, he doesn't punch out. He's aggressive when he wants to be sometimes. He'll take pitches, just grind out at bats, you know, singles, doubles, home runs. I mean, just everything. And I don't, you know, you guys know it in baseball where, you know, first pitch of the game is usually a fastball, right? Down and away. Yep. You may go in. I've thrown this dude a changeup. I've thrown this dude a slot because he leads off. I've thrown him first pitch slider. I've thrown him sinker under the hands. I've started him backdoor sinker. I've started him fastball up, down. He hits everything.
Yeah.
And it's just there's no game planning around that. I've watched – every time I face him, I've watched all of our previous at-bats. How can I attack him differently? How can I do this? How can I do that better? But the dude just finds the outfield grass and sometimes the grandstands, you know. But
yeah.
You know, in division, you know, he's probably the guy that – and he hits everybody. He hits 280, 300 every year, and just a great hitter, great dude, too. I've talked to him a few times. But and then you have, obviously, Lindor.
He really doesn't get the credit he deserves anyways. Like, I mean, he's, you know, 280 to 300, you know, and you do that every year. That's solid, man. That's going to get you somewhere, you know, wherever you go. So, yeah, Merrifield doesn't get the credit he deserves. So, I understand where you're coming from there.
Yeah, I think so too. He's a hell of a hitter. Obviously, Lindor, who's out of Cleveland, thankfully now, he's always a tough out. Jose Ramirez is always a tough out. Jose Abreu, we face a lot. The White Sox lineup is pretty good. you got to learn.
And it,
hopefully getting better.
I love that answer of because like I said, like asking the question, you know. Everybody thinks, like, oh, yeah, like, you know, Michael Fulmer, he's a big leaguer. The toughest guy he faces is Mike Trout, you know, or somebody like that of a big name. Mm-hmm. But it's people – and the guy I'm thinking of, you know, he's a big name, but he goes a little bit under the radar of hitting-wise, and that's DJ LeMahieu. Like, you know, with the Yankees now, like, that dude is a hitting machine. But, you know, the big names come to your mind first, you know. But then, like, you saying Whit, you know, like, of you up there battling with him, you're like, man, how do I get this guy out? And it's just – it's crazy because everybody at your level, they can hit.
Exactly.
You know, that's why they're there.
One through nine.
Yeah, and I haven't really faced DJ that many times. I think I faced him in Colorado once and or a couple at-bats. And I don't know – I may have faced him in New York, but – yeah, it's another guy. These guys just find holes. They battle pitches. They foul off good pitches. They take the balls and force you to throw strikes. And you know, those are the tough outs. You know, I'd take a guy who swings as hard as he can, or the home run guy, bigger guys, over the scrappy hitters that just sit there and just foul everything off, because it takes a long at bat, and you know, it's tough.
Yeah, man, it makes your job harder.
Mm-hmm,
we want to make our job as easy as we can. So, you know, obviously, you know, Caleb couldn't join us this week, but yeah, you know that, you know, his questions that he had. Caleb's our golfer. Caleb's a phenomenal golfer, and he wanted to know, do you guys, like, when you're in season, you know, and you have an off day or whatever, wherever you're at, do you guys golf on the road? And if you do, who's the best golfer on the Tigers? Because Caleb wants – all he wants is golf.
Golf guy.
So I do most of – we do most of our golfing during spring. I can probably count on one hand how many times I've actually golfed during the seasons. But, you know, our off days, we kind of like to take them ourselves because we play baseball every single day of the week usually, about 29 days out of every month. So. It's as far as the off days come, it's, you know, you like to take some time with the family and kind of do your own thing and just rest and relax. But I've played a few times. I forget what the course is called up in Minneapolis. We played a couple of times. And back when I played it, so Verlander took me there. Back when I played it, it was a walking only course with caddies. And I wasn't any good back then. I'm still not good, but I wasn't any good back then. And let's put it this way. I paid my caddy extra because of how far we had to walk to my ball.
Yeah.
And not down the fairway either.
It's so never
we don't really play. No, no. Maybe the other fairway. But we don't play much much during the season. And I feel like our team has kind of shifted from guys who love to golf, some older veteran guys, to some younger guys that are either just getting into golf or some of them are really good. We've got a – actually played today. We've got a shortstop that got traded over here from the Cubs, I think, and his name is Zach Short, and he's about a scratch golfer. I don't think he's made the big leagues yet, but he's pretty good. Tyler Alexander, who is a lefty reliever for us, who tied the AL record last year for 9 consecutive punch-outs. He went out and shot 76 today, so he's wow. He said he played the round of his life. So we got a couple guys. We got a couple guys that can hit the stick pretty good.
Hell yeah, man!
Are you ever getting Miggy out on a golf course? Because that dude can hit a baseball a mile.
Yeah, golf swing's a little different. I mean, we've got guys that can hit a baseball a long way, but can't hit a little golf ball on a tee. So. And vice versa, too. I mean, a lot of these pitchers that I've seen, and myself included, can't swing a baseball bat anymore because we haven't seen it, and can go out and hit a strike at a mile.
Yeah. I wish I was good at golf. I've been to Top Golf with Red several times, man, and it's all ass every time I go, but I swear I put my heart into it.
And I always tell the buddies I golf with, you know, I show up to the course. I know that I'm not very good at it, but give me a couple beers and I'm going to start asking people what the course record is because I'm going to break it.
Yeah, you know, you just have to – that's what you got to do. You got to act confident. You got to say – you got to show up, say, where's the cart lady? Where's first tee and what's the course record? That's what you got to ask every time you step up to the course.
Absolutely.
It's only natural that, you know, Michael Fulmer would say something like that. So, all right, man. We got another one for you. We got another good one for you. So this is something I've always also wanted to know. I'd also like to know this from each team, just because coming from college baseball, you got really good characters, man. Like baseball is that sport that you get like solid, funny, crazy,
weird.
You get weird. you get all the different kind of personalities from people and it's something I've learned. Like being a college athlete, I played with some dudes from New York City, and they were the wildest cats I've ever been around, man. So I want to know is who is the funniest, the best character, you know, the teammate on the Tigers that you get to play with, man?
Ooh, so, I mean, you know, this clubhouse of guys we have now, they like to keep it light. Everybody's good people around here, and obviously Miggy's, you know, kind of the practical jokester, playing jokes on guys.
I was going to ask that as well. I really thought that's what was going to happen because I see him on the field, you know, doing that funny shit he always does, man. Miggy's Miggy, man. There's no hiding that, bro.
Exactly. And he's the same way he is, on the field, off the field. And, he does a great job, especially, but it's fun seeing these younger guys that come up and, obviously, I mean, everybody that's coming up now has watched Miggy for almost their entire life, you know, with how young guys are getting now. But he's just the same dude on the field you see. He's the same way off the field, and that's what makes him great. One of the new guys this year is we got Derek Holland, and he'll crack you up. He's one of those guys that's a little out there, you know, honest, brutally honest. He's another guy. Yes, he will. And it's but he's always keeping everything in a light mood. So we've got some good guys like that. But I think everybody's got some good character and this, you know, the chemistry here, especially the guys I've played with the last 4 or 5 years, it's been awesome making friendships and long lasting ones at that.
That's awesome, man. I'm really glad that you said Miguel Cabrera, dude, because that I was literally thinking that he was going to be kind of the go-to guy that you were going to say, because that guy's charisma is top notch, man. He's just got it. You know, whatever it is, that dude's got it, man.
No, for sure.
Yeah. And we have, you know, the viral video that went probably, I don't know, probably 3-4 years ago from now, that little kid in the stands, you know, that I think he was an Indians fan maybe, was just heckling him at first, you know, and then he comes out, gives him a bat and some batting gloves, you know, and just stuff like that. It's like, okay, like he is a normal guy, you know, like obviously he won a triple crown, did he not? Like was obviously the best hitter in baseball at the time, you know, and he's just doing stuff like that. So it's refreshing, you know, especially to the listeners and us, you know, like this mega superstar of Miguel Cabrera and just down to earth, you know, just same guy, just like you and me, you know, just doing this podcast, you know, just sit down and talk to you.
The really cool thing is, like, you know, Kel Kosho, he shared a story about Derek Jeter a couple weeks ago, and it was the same way. You know, it's good to know that even Derek Jeter, the captain, is the same way, you know, just a down to earth, you know, just the same guy you're going to meet on the field and off the field. It's awesome to hear about stuff like that.
Yeah, you really enjoy playing against those guys and meeting them either after your career is over or just before the game, just talking to them and hear that, you know, how much character and how great of guys these opponents are, that you can keep it, you know, in between the lines, keep it competitive. Obviously, yeah. All the guys up here are super competitive, but kind of off the field, take the stress away and just go out and hang out.
Yeah, absolutely. Man. And then we'll going on that, we'll go back to another Caleb question that he was wanting to know. Obviously, you guys travel a ton. You know, you're in a different city probably every, you know, 5 to 6 days. You're in a different city, and he wants to know what's your favorite. I mean, obviously, probably your favorite part to throw in is Detroit because you got home fans behind you. But if we're talking about going on the road, where do you like to throw? You mark one on the calendar of, you know, like, it's, we're on the road, but I like throwing in this ballpark. And then to back that one up, do you have one that you mark on the calendar? You're like, man, my start day is in this city, and I hate throwing there.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, Comerica, being as big as it is, it's always nice to throw there. I'd say I really enjoyed – I've only played there once, but San Diego was pretty good. I'm talking like mound quality, right? Some guys like steep mounds. Some guys like flat mounds, loose dirt, hard dirt. I mean, it varies from city to city, stadium to stadium. But I think San Diego was – I enjoyed – you know, what the mound was and kind of the backstop and backdrop, and my sights were a lot easier to find than some other parks. But
right.
San Diego was cool. I loved Globe Life Park before they tore it down. I haven't been in the new one yet in Arlington for the Rangers.
Yeah.
A couple I don't like. It's just stadiums. Something about Cleveland just tears me up because – and it's not anything outside the field or the fans or anything like that. It's literally the mound and the sights, and it changes you. But I just do not do well in Cleveland.
Right.
In Cleveland, that's it. I don't know. And then, let's see. Minnesota's good. Chicago's another one. The White Sox I'm not too high on. But I like Seattle, San Diego, and obviously your Boston and Wrigley's are awesome to be able to pitch in. I've gotten to do both of those. And but, you know, as far as your bandboxes go, you got Cincinnati and obviously New York. And those in Colorado wasn't fun either. Colorado.
A tough place to pitch.
Could you breathe?
Yeah, it was tough to breathe, okay, you know, for two reasons. One, the thin air, and two, I had to actually hit that game. And I think I tried to leg out about two singles and ran about halfway down the right field line and made the last out of the inning. And I walked my butt back to the dugout before I went back out to pitch. I didn't jog back. And the funny story about Colorado, and you guys may have seen this a few years ago, but this is going to sound bad, but so I was pitching and warming up. It was the bottom of the first inning. Our catcher made the last out in the top of the first. Our backup catcher was playing first base that game. So he's over at first base throwing ground balls to the infielders. So our utility man, Andrew Romine was his name, grabs a face mask and a catcher's glove and squats down behind home plate. So usually this happens a couple times a year, and you know, I try to be nice and easy with it, but you know, umpire's trying to like hurry me up, and our catcher's taking a sweet ass time in the dugout. So I'm like, okay, well, I just threw all four seam fastballs. You know, I'm gonna throw a little two seam fastball here, right? A little sinker. You know, should go left to right, obviously, and the umpire at the time was not the brightest guy, because he decided he wanted to track pitches with a non-catcher catching a ball.
Right.
So I try to throw a sinker, that thin air in Colorado. It doesn't sink. It actually cuts. And our catcher whiffed it and hit the umpire right in the sack. So, yeah, it was the whole – it was not top 10
not
that Friday.
I'm not getting a call for the rest of the night.
It was – yeah. But, you know, he wasn't back there anymore because he went down and actually had to go to the hospital. Everything's good. Everything is good. But it was about a 30-minute delay, 20-30-minute delay before I got to actually throw my first pitch. So that's why I don't like Colorado. It makes your ball do weird things, and make sure you always throw the straight one when you're throwing warm-up pitches.
Yeah, for sure.
God, that's hilarious.
That's great.
And that's good stuff right there, man.
And you had mentioned it, you know, like of you're saying Cleveland, you know, it's not about the fans or anything. You just don't like throwing there. But that transitions us to, you know, the next question of how weird is it now, you know, like in these COVID times that we have, like even in spring training, you know, people love spring training. Like people will go and watch spring training, you know, they like to see the team, you know, see what they got for that year. But with all the COVID stuff, we don't get fans anymore. So hopefully, you know, we're on the right track that, you know, fans are going to start coming back into stadiums, you know, watching you pitch and all that. But that was another question that Caleb had is, how is it with the fans versus no fans? You know, is it weird to you or how is it?
Yeah, it was extremely weird. It was brutal. It's tough. It's tough to get your adrenaline going. It's tough to go out there and not see the fans. It's tough with the artificial crowd noise like in a video game.
Yeah.
It's just tough to get your body going from what you're used to with a stadium packed at 40, 50,000 people standing up, screaming, cursing at you if they have to, you know, you miss both sides of it. You miss the away fans, you miss the home fans.
Yeah.
It's just part of the game.
Whether they love you or hate you, you want that noise and that adrenaline pump that you get from the fans.
Yeah. And you know, obviously no fans, you could hear everything the other dugout saying.
Yeah.
Everything your dugout saying.
You don't want to hear.
Right, yeah.
But hey, Miguel, tell me I suck.
Yeah. But it's hopefully this year we'll be back in it. I know some ballparks are doing limited capacity. I know I think I saw Arlington is doing 100% capacity.
Yeah, man, that's going to be awesome. Sure. I might go to a couple of Rangers games this year, man. I don't know.
Well, there you go. I'm not sure what Michigan's doing yet. The Michigan, I think we're allowing fans. I'm not sure how many. But it'll just be nice having Tigers fans back at Comerica for sure.
Well, hell, going from zero to, you know, 25%, man, that's going to be a world change, you know, because, I mean, you're at least going to get some interaction. I feel like watching baseball last year was ass. I didn't even want to watch it because there's nobody there, man. It looked flat. I felt flat. Usually I get butterflies when I see somebody come out there throwing the first pitch of the game. And last year I got nothing out of watching baseball, man. It kind of sucked, to be honest with you. And basketball is the same way. Football is the same way. The no fans thing is taking a toll on, you know, sports fans all around. And I can only imagine what it's taking a toll on the players at themselves. So, you know, they often, yeah,
they make the game, you know, every game, you know.
Yeah, man.
We play 162 games in the regular season every year. Things can get a little monotonous, but you know what? It's the fans that we enjoy having the fans and, you know, how much they cheer, and when they get into the game, you want to do that much extra to make send them home happy. So we're excited for fans to be back. Absolutely.
Absolutely. And
oh, yeah.
And with that being said too, that'll lead us perfect into the next one that I personally want to know, because, you know, we started on the draft day. You got butterflies, you know, like, hey, I'm gonna get drafted today. I don't think those butterflies probably had anything to do with your MLB debut. That was, you know, you packed stadium then, you know, obviously. can you kind of walk us through that day? You know, you get the call, you're called up, and then you're thrown into the rotation. You're making your MLB debut. And I remember we were at – I was still playing at UCO. We were on the road, and we went and ate after the game, and you're making your debut. And I'm sitting with Isaac Hellbush, and they had the game on up there. You know, we were like, hey, like, you got to get the Tigers game on, you know, blah, blah, blah. Fulmer's making his debut. And I'll brag for you, you shoved in your debut. But if you can kind of, you know, walk us through that day, you know, like, how were the jitters, you know, like, what was your kind of your routine that you did, like, just whatever you got for us.
The jitters were there pregame, but after that first pitch, they kind of all seemingly disappeared. But leading up to it, I could not remember what I had to do to get my body ready for a start. No matter what it was, like, I'm like, okay, I think I go to the weight room now, or wait, no, do I get in the hot tub first? I could not remember. So luckily we had Mike Aviles was starting at shortstop that day, and I've only played with him 1 year, but he was a great dude. He's the only one that kind of came up to me and was just like, hey man, I'm at short today. If you need anything, just call me over during the game. We'll talk it out. If you need a breather, just let me know. But we got your back, and just go what you've been doing. And I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, that's pretty cool, right? It's, yeah. It's pretty cool to have guys like that. And, you know, I'll never forget, my first big league out was a comebacker to me, and I'm running over to first to underhand it and look up, and who do you know, Miguel Cabrera is standing right there on first base. So
yes,
I'll never forget that moment, and just seeing him, and like I said, I watched him. I'm sure you guys have too, kind of growing up and see the career he has. But it was awesome to be able to do that. And you know, I was a little nervous when the game started, because my first career strikeout was Brian Dozier, who batted second that game. And it was the first inning, and I think I got fastball away, first pitch, threw it. I think it was a ball. I got fastball again, threw it for a strike. And our catcher, Bobby Wilson's his name, kind of been around for a while, backup catcher a little bit, great defensive catcher. I didn't shake off a single time that game.
You want me to throw?
Yeah, exactly. He gives me like these fingers that are like together, kind of. So you know, I'm like, okay, well, that's a changeup. I'm thinking back at it. I'm like, shoot, was that three fingers or four fingers? So instead of me just like stepping off and not doing a thing, this is a 1-1 count, thankfully. So it wasn't, you know, big at bat or right. Big pitch.
Yeah.
So I grip changeup. And I'm like, man, I wonder if he knows my changeup isn't any good yet. Like, I don't really throw it that often, but I threw it anyway. So I'm like, well, last second, I go, maybe that was a slider. So I take my changeup, and you guys know, you know, when you throw a changeup, you're going to pronate right, and the ball's supposed to go left to right from a right-handed pitcher, and down. So my dumbass decided to throw it like a slider with changeup grip. Yeah, and it was one of the nastiest changeups I've ever thrown. And it cut. It went right to left. Brian Dozier swung over top, missed it. And then the very next pitch, he gives me that same sign. I'm like, wait, I definitely saw three fingers there. So I throw a slider and ends up swinging over it, and I punch him out. So I go in the dugout, and after I'm like, hey, did you give me like two sliders there? He goes, no, the one was yeah. He goes, why? I said, well, the first one was a changeup. I just cut.
I just cut it up.
And he goes, well, stay there with it. That was a damn good pitch. Said, great. So, and anyway, the next at bat, my first hit I gave up, which I was kind of happy with because it was to Joe Mauer. And Joe Mauer is obviously a hitting machine. Yeah. And I think, you know, I don't think I threw him anything other than fastballs. And it was like an 8 or 9 pitch at bat. He's fouling balls off. He's taking pitches. I think I punched him out 3 times before the umpire would give me a strike call. But, you know, that's another story. But anyway, he about took my head off with a line drive in the middle. So my first base hit I gave up was Joe Mauer, which is pretty cool too.
That's absolutely. Okay. Hell, that's a damn good AB too, if you ask
me. And to our listeners out there that you know, we got some high school coaches that, you know, that text me and listen to, they want to pass on things to their players, you know, because we've had Kale on and now we got you. So that's a great one that Michael Fulmer is the creator of. If you don't know the sign, you think it's one or two, combine the two.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that.
Throw a changeup with a slider with the slider as well.
Throw a collider. Go ahead and throw a collider. The catcher,
I guarantee you, I could not recreate that pitch if I tried.
Yeah. So
I just turned it. I turned it instead of let it paint.
You make your debut. You know, you make your debut. You got those jitters out of the way, and you have a great season. Obviously, you know, you won Rookie of the Year. There's one guy in you know, each division that, or each American League, National League that wins that a year. You won Rookie of the Year, you know, had a great, phenomenal season. Then the next year, you have a great season as well, selected as an MLB All-Star. And that's, you know, like, you guys at that level, like, that's got to be, you know, kind of like a badge of honor, you know, like, you're an MLB All-Star. The fans, the people, the voters, whoever it is, you know, they think of you as being the cream of the crop of the MLB. You know, you're an MLB All-Star, you're a 2017 MLB All-Star. That's something that I've wanted to know for a long time. Like, how was that weekend? Because you're obviously surrounded by the best baseball players in the world, you know?
All at one time as well. Like, you're hanging out with the best of the best of your time right then and there, man. That's got to be, like, nipples hard the whole fucking week.
Yeah, it was really an honor of a lifetime. And unfortunately, I didn't get to pitch that game in the All-Star game because I'd pitched the previous Sunday.
Yeah.
And the All-Star game was on Tuesday. So, you know, I told the coaches that if they needed me, I'd be there. But they told me they had enough pitching. And so I just sat back and kind of enjoyed the festivities.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the beauty of it, though, man. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, we're going to save this guy's arm because he means so much to this organization. But he's here because he got picked. Because he did such a great job during the season. You know, I mean, it's the beauty, bro.
Yeah, it was awesome. You know, Justin Upton was with us in 17. He made it to kind of an alternate. There was a late scratch. I forget who it was. But I was really happy that he made it because we were actually playing in Cleveland before the All-Star break. And my itinerary was – I was going to have to fly after I just pitched against these guys, yeah. Fly on their team plane with their four or five all-stars
with
fly
them.
Down to Miami. Yes.
Wow.
But kind of last minute, Justin Upton gets selected and he goes out and buys us a little private jet to fly down my family and his family down there. So shout out to him. And he kind of, that was his fourth or fifth all-star game, I'm guessing.
Upton was a total badass. Yeah, like in 2016, 17, 18. Yeah, man, it makes perfect sense. I'm going to buy this private jet for you guys. You mind joining me?
Yeah, he was definitely a great help.
How awkward would that plane ride have been if Upton did that? You know, like, you're going to fly with them, like, hey, guys, sorry, I punched you out twice tonight. Yeah, I punched you out three times tonight. Let's just have a good weekend and get down to Florida, you know, for the festivities.
And that's what it was. You know, I don't think it would have been too awkward. But, you know, I did talk to those guys. We're in the same clubhouse for the All-Star game, both American League, and they're all great dudes too. So, you know, we talked pitching, we talked hitting, we talked everyday stuff, and That's the, like we talked about earlier, the great character guys. You know, you love to see them and you love to talk with them. You talk shop with them and everything. But All-Star weekend, that was the Home Run Derby was phenomenal. You know, watching, I think Aaron Judge won it that year, just hitting bombs in Marlins Park.
Straight off.
Oh, it was incredible. And then, you know, we had a, you know, after party after the Home Run Derby. With a kind of a private concert with all the All-Stars and their families were allowed. And then the All-Star game and just kind of being around that atmosphere and the fans and getting introduced on the field before the game and, you know, the red carpet show and it's definitely something I'll never forget. But that weekend was up there being honored for it.
Yeah, dude, that's so awesome, man. Yeah, congratulations again on that, dude. That's a feat that, you know, not a lot of people get to sit there and say, yeah, I got to hang out with all these guys and I was part of that, you know. So that was a big year right there, partner.
Thank you. Trying to get back to there.
Yeah, you'll get it, man.
Absolutely. And
back to shoving.
That'll bring us into our next topic. And you know, I had the surgery as well. I hate talking about it because any baseball player, when those two words together or those two letters, when we start talking about TJ, you know, that's, man, it curls your stomach. You know what I mean? Like, as a baseball player, you hate to hear it. You know, I did it in college, had the surgery, and you're recovering right now. I pray that, you know, everything's going good. I know you made your spring training debut a week ago or so. And, I read the article on it, you know, AJ Hinch, your manager, was like, hey, you know, his stuff's on its way back. We're excited to have him back. So if you could walk us through, you know, when it happened, you know, you got the news, you know, your thoughts on it, your recoveries, the ups and downs, you know, how's it been for you?
It's been really good. It was the longest 15 months of my life, but you know, I don't even think the struggles were with the rehab part of it or the recovery process of it. I mean, to this day and age, you have guys, I feel like more guys have had it than not at this level and then this time and year. But it's the 15 months that you don't, it's a long time without baseball, without throwing, without being competitive, especially at this level. But it kind of went smoothly. You know, you focus on other things. So like for me, you know, my knee hadn't been the best, right? I've had three knee surgeries and, you know, my job was to try to make my knee feel better when my elbow was kind of hung up. And so I ended up losing about 45 pounds, that year in 2019 after Tommy John surgery because of the knee. So I wanted to make the knee feel better. And, you know, so I wanted to lose the weight and then try to maybe put some good weight back on, and it helped a lot. So the guys that were recovering from Tommy John, it's not just trying to get that elbow right. It's try to find ways that you can make yourself better when you're not throwing, right? Or when you're not pitching or you can't pitch. The hardest part for me though was obviously last year with this COVID stuff, and you know, we had a delayed season, a shortened season. There was no minor leagues. So when I came back last year, I didn't get any rehab starts. I didn't get any
couldn't go down
time in the minor leagues.
That rehab start that you needed.
Right. And I knew my stuff would come back eventually. And I'm still working on it. But last year, it was real tough because you're trying to face the best hitters in the world when you know that you're not 100% yet.
Yep.
And you don't have that time face other opponents like you would in the minor leagues for your rehab starts. You're going out and you're facing the Kansas City Royals, your first game back in 2 years. And, you know, you give up a couple home runs and your velocity's not back yet. You have no feel for your slider, your curveball or changeup. And, you know, the thing is just to not get frustrated with it. And I know my year last year, I struggled with it all year trying to be my old self and find that velocity back and really snap off this slider or breaking ball. But in the back of your mind, you're like, hey, this is a brand new elbow. We got to kind of take it easy. And I just kind of felt myself fishing for trying to be that old self when that stuff wasn't quite there yet. But a healthy offseason this year was phenomenal. I was glad to be able to be back home for it for the first time in a few years. And this spring has been great so far. Like I said, I'm still working to get back to that level. And I think we'll get there eventually. It's just taking time and reps, and slowly but surely, I feel like we're making strides in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you brought up the velocity of it, you know, and you know, there's some arms out there, you know, that they don't rely on velocity. You know, like you got people like Aroldis Chapman. He's relying on velocity. You know, he's got good stuff as well. But you know, you yourself, you know, you're a mid nines, you know, run it up, maybe a little bit of high nines, you know, and that velocity, if it's not there, like, I know, like, you know, us all being pitchers, like, your secondary stuff can be great, but if that ball's not jumping out of your hand, you just, it's not, you just don't feel comfortable, you know, so.
Yeah. You have to change the way you sequence batters, right? And that's kind of was the thing for me last year is I tried to throw less fastballs because, you know, I'm not sitting 95, 97, 98 anymore. But when you try to pitch like you are, it's not going to go in your favor.
Right.
So that's a big thing I've been working on is this year, even though my velocity's kind of creeping back up so far, it's been good. And I love the way the ball's coming out and stuff like that. But it's also, you know, refining your changeup and your curveball and your slider or cutter or sinker. And just you have to command the ball a lot better in the zone with your fastball, not just throw strikes, but throw quality strikes. And that's kind of where I struggled last year, trying to overdo it, trying to get that velocity back in one pitch. It ain't going to work. Trust me.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, at the high school level, you know, you're throwing 95 miles an hour, you can miss. Where you're at now, you cannot miss with 95. You know, you can't get away with 95 and missing because they will hit it.
It'll go a long way. Trust me.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so let's get back on top of your pitching. So your fastball sits, you know, you're mid to highs. You know, you pump that fucking Ched, man, and you're really good at it. You always have been. And as far as I can remember, you know, back in the day whenever we were playing, when we played you guys those couple of times, I remember your slider just being stupid nasty. Man, just like I'm talking, like I see it and then I don't see it. You know what I mean? Type of thing. And so, what I really want to know is nowadays, what is your go-to pitch, man? What is that pitch that you go to that's going to say, all right, I'm about to sit this cat down on the bench and he's going to sit there until nine other batters hit in front of him. You know what I mean?
So that's actually a great question because it used to be my sinker. Being able to throw it, you know, mid 90s, upper 90s at times, and you know, I would throw it, I could, you know, throw it kind of anywhere I wanted to. I felt like I had good command with it. I could throw it under lefty's hands for start to ball to strike and come back and get to the strikeout looking.
Bill.
But you know, now it's a little tougher to do that with the velocity not being all the way back yet. But I learned this new cutter last year that I really enjoyed, and I kind of worked on it this offseason a little bit and try to make it the shape that I'd like to, kind of hoping to be back toward my high school slider days. Those were pretty nice. And so, I mean, I think that it's going in the right direction with little cutter.
I might have only been a high school hitter, man, but that slider was pretty damn nice, man. that bad boy was doing some things.
Well, thanks. It's, you know, you don't really have to command it that much in high school, and in the big leagues, you got to command it a little better, and that was a problem with it.
Absolutely, man. I've seen some pretty dope sliders, man. Like, sliders, was always my favorite pitch to throw, and I had a 12-6 curveball. So, I mean, the 12-6 was what really got me going. You know, I'd sit batters down left and right with a 12-6, but I'd really like to throw my slider because I could put some velo behind it, let that bitch cut down, and then just carve people up without, you know, let them think it was a fastball.
But yeah, I mean, it looks more like a fastball.
See, when you're throwing high nines, boy, that's a bad boy right there, man. It's nice.
Yeah, it's super frustrating. Like in high school, like when we faced you, you're running a fastball up there at 95 miles an hour in high school. But then, not only is he throwing hard, but he's got the secondary stuff. It's like, what do I do? Like I'm 17 years old. What do I do? You know, Chance and I faced Dylan Bundy in the state championship our sophomore year. And he's running it up like 98 miles an hour as a sophomore in high school. And he didn't need any secondary stuff. Here's a fastball, try to hit it. But then we see you that same year and you're running up 95, 96 miles an hour. We can't hit it because you can't catch up to it, but then you're like, oh, well, you've seen 96. Look at this slider, though.
Michael, I shit you not. The same way I got a swinging bunt off you, I got a swinging bunt off of Dylan Bundy.
Hey, those are, and I was the only one. He's a better name to have.
Yeah, I was the only one who scored that game, dude.
It goes down in the books as a line drive, right?
That's it. He is in your book, and you have to let him know that too.
Absolutely. But
Bundy was the best high school pitcher I've ever seen. The dude would sit 96 to 101. Like, there, I don't know if this is true or not.
Dude, 97.
Easy money.
Just hanging out there.
We've got the same agent, and I want to say he told me this a while back, but Bundy's junior or senior year in high school, he had like 70 innings and walked one person.
Jeez.
That's incredible.
One walk. I don't know if it's true. It's a rumor that I heard, but
we got to go on Mythbusters, man.
It's incredible if it's true, and I believe
it. That's seriously unreal, man. I don't care who you are. Like, you go through that many innings and you only have one walk, then and no wonder he should be a lot further than he is right now. To be honest with you, man.
I'll credit it to, maybe those high school athletes did what I did when I faced him, and that was step into the box, close my eyes, and swing.
stand close to the plate and wear it off the elbow guard. That's what you need to do.
Just whatever you got to do to get on. And with it, that state championship game we faced him, like, just a little side story on that one. They beat us 4-1 in the state championship. I think Bundy struck out like 19 and hit a grand slam.
and he hit a grand slam
and beat us 4-1.
Yeah.
Oh, he could swing it too, I guess.
We single-handedly got beat by Dylan Bundy.
Dingers and stingers, bub, I'll tell you that much. And
I think a lot of teams got beat by Dylan Bundy alone.
Yeah absolutely. I went to the 6A game at BOK Stadium, Owosso versus Broken Arrow, when Archie started the state championship. Owosso didn't start Bundy. Still to this day, I kind of question it. I was actually up there. I watched you guys first.
I was about to say, you stay for the rule game afterwards or no?
Yeah. I was up there. At that time, by the time we were seniors, I'd played with you and Brian those summers, which one of these episodes we'll have to get Shaq on.
Oh, boy.
Shaq will be a good episode for all the stories that he has of playing with us or coaching us. But – yeah, I went up there to, watch you and Brian and Owosso and Broken Arrow playing before, and I was just like, good Lord, like, these guys up here can play.
Could you imagine four big leaguers on that field the day you stepped there?
Yeah, in a span of a couple hours.
10 years later, it would be four big leaguers on that field that played that day. Yes, it's cool to think about. I love the fact that Oklahoma is starting to be a bright spot for high school arms and players in general. And, we can thank Bundy and Bradley for that. start those.
For sure.
We can thank them for that. Yeah, damn right. We can thank you for that as well. And we can also thank John Gray for that, man, because he brought the Yankees to Chandler's high school field. And I remember that, and I'll never let that memory go past. I remember the Yankee scout sitting in the stands clocking John while we were playing Red Oak.
Yeah, we talked about that.
That was pretty unreal.
We talked about that in Kel's episode, of he was like, Oklahoma's on the rise of the talent that they have, of just of what they're doing now. Yourself, in the bigs with the Tigers and the awards that you've won and the All-Stars, and then we got JT Romuto, Oklahoma guy. We got John Gray, Oklahoma guy. We got Brian Anderson, starting third baseman for the Marlins. And we got Kale just signed the deal with the Tigers. They're going to team back up with you. He told the story of you called him at like 6:45 in the morning. He said he had a couple bourbon drinks the night before, and he said he was passed out. And you called him and you were like, hey man, the Tigers are going to offer you, So he was obviously excited about it. He's going to the Tigers, going to team back up with you. We said in his episode how cool it would be that, Mike rolls out on a start, goes eight innings, has a shutout, maybe gives up a hit or two there, and then Hale gets to come out of the bullpen and close it down. We'll start calling them the Deer Creek Tigers.
Deer Creek Tigers.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Kel usually wakes up at like 5 or 6 o'clock to go work out anyway, so I thought me calling him at 6:30, 6:45, he'd be awake already. But
yeah.
I thought he'd be excited to hear that news and say, hey, just keep your phone on you. You never know who might call. We'll see. Hopefully see you down in Lakeland soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Man, that was a really cool story that he told about that, man. I thought that was awesome, man.
And, Mike, man, we don't want to keep you all night. You know, I know you're a busy man, so – we'll get to our last question that we got to you, and probably the most important question, to be honest, and that it was one of Caleb's. Like, you know, we've said it before, you're at the highest level of baseball that you can get to, of your profession, of getting there. Who's been your biggest mentor? Like, the guy that you can turn to that has helped you get to where you're at now?
See, that's tough. I mean, there's a lot of guys, and I want to name a few. I don't know if I can narrow it down to one, but you know, I think our high school coach was a big one, Ron Moore. When we were at Deer Creek, he gave us every opportunity to do what we were able to do. Coached us the right way, taught us how to be great young men, and kind of grow up in the world after we graduated high school. And you know, can't thank him enough for what he's done for me and my wife, Kelsey. We both graduated from Deer Creek, and their family's been a lot to us. I mean, obviously my dad, he's been, you know, coached me until I threw hard enough for him to stop catching my bullpens, and which is about like 14, I think. Yeah, about 14, I think I hit him in his big toe and knocked his toenail straight off. So that was the last bullpen he ever caught for me.
Well, I'm about to get you. I'm about to start buying you lessons.
And then, you know, you've got players. I mean, even shoot, Shaq worked with me before, kind of before I was even talked about going into pro ball, and he's worked with me pitching, and you know, Shaq, the classic stories he has, and, you know, he's been great. But then you get to, you know, the minor leagues and coaches and staffs and pitching coaches, all that stuff. But, you know, in the big leagues, getting to work with, like my rookie year, we had Justin Verlander, awesome guy to work with, Mike Pelfrey.
He was an advocate on promoting you for rookie of the year. I seen that tweet, and I thought it was so cool that, you know, Verlander was like, hey, my guy, Michael Fulmer, he's rookie of the year. You know, that was so awesome.
Well, he should have won Cy Young that year too. That's the sad part. But you know, anyway, Mike Pelfrey was there, Anibal Sanchez, Jordan Zimmerman was there. You know, Francisco Rodriguez was a big one too. K-Rod, he obviously on the end of his career, but you know, guys that have been around for so long and the game and just the life in the big leagues just come so natural to them. They soak up the spotlight. They know how to act. They know how to play the game the right way. And that's the biggest thing for high school kids, for younger kids wanting to get into pro ball and ultimately make the big leagues. It's just play the game the right way. And I was lucky enough to grow up on that. And I can't thank, you know, everybody enough for teaching me how to do it the right way. And that's kind of my biggest thing is we're a young team now. Got some young stud pitchers coming up. And but that's what I try to pass on, is everything I learned and the glory of it, and everything is awesome, right? You feel honored to be there, but don't let it change who you are, and still play the game, just a game. Play the game the right way, just like we did in high school.
Absolutely.
Right, man. That's fucking awesome. I love that response, man, because you named off so many names. You didn't give off one just complete, like, person who took you from where you are or where you were to where you are now, man. You named off so many people that actually, like, helped you get to where you are. So that means a lot to a lot of people, you know what I mean? Because you didn't have one mentor, you had a full team. So it takes a team, you know, to make somebody. And
absolutely.
I think that turns somebody into a real man. You know what I mean? I mean, it means a lot to a lot of people that don't know what it means to be a team.
It's all about the journey, man. It's been a long journey. Shoot, it's been 10 years since we graduated high school.
Yeah, it has, yeah. Man.
It's 10 years. The body does not work the same as it did in high school, I'll tell you that. I get a lot more sore.
it also, you know, it also had to push you a little bit of, you know, when we were at OBA doing those lessons with Shaq and everything, like when you walk through the door and you see Zach Wunderlich, you know, doing his bullpen, you're like, man, yeah, I gotta come with my best stuff today.
I gotta keep up with Big Red over here. That's what it is. I'm just glad you're left-handed, so you didn't take any of the spotlight away from the right-handed pitcher.
Yeah, and you know, I was always one that I was like, no, Mike's our guy. You know,
that's a great teammate.
So we got to get to, you know, I told you before, we got to get to our listener question. We got to give a shout out to Ethan Sharp. Came in with our listener question today, and you know, as you were talking about, you know, your coach in high school, you know, and all that, he wanted to know, do you still keep up with Deer Creek baseball? I know that you're a busy man, but you probably check scores, you know, and talk to a few people. So shout out to Ethan Sharp for the question, and do you still keep up with Deer Creek?
I still keep up with them as much as I can. On Twitter, they do a good job of posting their stuff on Twitter. But I'm not as much into it since Coach Moore left. He's over at Putnam City North now, I believe. But Deer Creek baseball, it's a great program, and it's only getting better and better. And I think I kind of stopped watching when the guys that I played with, you know, their younger brothers graduated. Okay. Right. Like I said, it's been 10 years. But you know, it's been pretty cool. There's one kid who always came to Deer Creek camps, like the Easter camp and summer camps, and that we'd go to work on and work with, and seeing him from when he was like 10 to graduating last year and played catcher for the Antlers all last year. But I mean, the kid was small kid, 10 years old, and watching him play high school baseball. And just going to the camps when he was younger was something really cool to watch. And I just think the Deer Creek community and Deer Creek family has been wonderful to myself and teammates, and that baseball program is getting pretty legit. So I'm happy to be an Antler.
Absolutely.
It's been for legit for a while. I mean, it's not like it wasn't legit when you were there. I mean, that shit was pretty legit. You guys have four major leaguers? Now, I mean, doing pretty good for the class of 2011, partner.
It was all right.
Still legit.
I'm gonna have to check the Tiger schedule and see if we got a Tiger Marlins matchup somewhere down the road.
Oh, I don't know. I think we play the NL Central this year, which means we might play the NL East next year. So I've never pitched against the Marlins. They came to Comerica a couple years ago. I saw Brian. Did not get to pitch against him, unfortunately. But I'm sure he'll tell you this story.
If the velocity ain't back now, Brian steps in the box, the velocity will be back.
That's all I need. He's already taken me deep in the minor leagues. I had a rehab start, and so I stayed back in spring training. I just had some bone chips taken on my elbow the off season before, and I was going to go to Double A that year, and they decided to give me a rehab start in High A, and we were playing in Jupiter, and he was batting three, and you know, I knew he was there, and I see him, and you know, my first time actually facing him, and I go slider ball one, slider ball two, and I said, well, shoot.
All right, fastball now.
I'll give him a fastball now. So I go sinker in, like under his hands, and he fists this out to right field, this little pop up, and just kept going and going and going and going. And the wind was, I mean, howling out, right? Just absolutely howling.
It's got to be howling out. Yeah. Why would it keep
going? It may hit the top of the fence. I think it barely went over. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of close to the foul pole and right, just inside out this ball. You know, the best part about that is there, the both clubhouses to that field in Jupiter, Florida are down the left field line. And you know, Brian, he's kind of quiet guy, you know, doesn't want to, you know, be in the spotlight, doesn't like, you know, be in the spotlight. So, I think we end up losing like 3-0 that game. I think he hit two home runs that game, one off me and one off one of the relievers, but I see him walking down the line, so I literally sprint out of our dugout on the first base side, and go up, and I put my arm around him, and he just looks at me, and I said, "You know, we're going with that was wind blown, right? That's we got to get our story right. We got." He goes, "It absolutely was." So, you know, as far as the story goes, it was a wind blown 2-0 fastball that he insides out to right, but he still got me.
Yeah, absolutely, and
hit his count, man. Hit his count.
For our listeners out there, I hope that, you know, Brian can come on with us on this podcast one of these episodes. I got to shoot him a text, you know, but we'll make sure to bring that one up, Mike. That was it, wind blown? Because Brian might have a different story that he'll probably think it's brought a 550 Oppo taco.
Nope, it's wind blown. He told me. He said we had our story straight.
Okay, so we got word of confirmation from you that it was wind blown.
Yes, absolutely, 100%.
All right, man. We have to chalk that one up, man.
Yeah, we'll have to remember to ask him about that. Like I said, Mike, we don't want to keep you all night. We are forever grateful, you know, of you taking the time to come join us today. You gave us some great content. You and Kale both, you know, the stories that you can share, you know, like we all, you know, live through you. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I always tune in. I got the MLB package, you know, and I always check, like, you know, Fulmer starting tonight. I'm pulling the game up. I'm gonna watch you throw. You know, I live through you, watching you pitch in the bigs. All the success that you've had, man, it fills my heart. You know, you're a great dude, and I wish nothing but the utmost success for you. Come back from TJ. I hope you shove this year, man. And again, just thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. It's been a long time since we played together, and obviously you two are friends, and you know, best of luck with the podcast. But thank you all for having me on.
Yeah,
you bet, man. And man, to make a long story short, with Red, we really give a shit about you, and we really care, and we hope you make a full comeback, and we hope you start shoving it up everybody's ass again. Okay, bro.
I appreciate it, guys.
Heck yeah, man. Hey, man. Once again, much appreciated, dog. That's big time from you, dog. We appreciate you.
Thank y'all.
And this has been Balls Deep, episode 4. Our special guest, Michael Fulmer. Come join us next week, and we'll talk some more sports. I appreciate you guys. Thank you.